If you've experienced the cycle of toxic relationships and you're sick and tired of feeling stuck, sad, and lonely, now is the time to heal and create your best life. In this podcast, you'll hear world-class toxic relationship recovery expert Stephanie McPhail sharing the support, guidance, and tools you need so you can be truly happy whether you're single or in a relationship. She is the real deal. I should know, she's my wife. Here's your host, Stephanie.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Toxic Love Transformation. I'm your host, Stephanie McPhail. And today I'll be interviewing Jessica Parente. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you so much for having me here.
I'm excited to have you. So we're doing, I keep joking around lately because I keep saying we're doing something different, but we are. Like every episode is so different and there's so much great information that our guests share that I think it's so important and relevant for people that are struggling in toxic relationships or have left a toxic relationship. And of course, you know, the idea is always to inspire and let people know that there's more for them out there. And so I love that I'm going to be able to share your story and your background knowledge about, you know, how you can possibly help as well. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got here.
So my day job, what I call my day job, is I'm a psychiatric mental health nurse practitioner by trade, but I'm also the founder of It Ends With You LLC, where I am a somatic and trauma-informed coach. I work with people who struggle with codependency, coming out of narcissistic abusive relationships. I also like to work with people who are struggling with unresolved grief. Those are kind of my specialty areas. And I'm also a brain spotting provider. Brain spotting is a little less known, but I like to call brain spotting EMDR on steroids. So it's another somatic trauma healing modality that really helps you work with the body. So how I got here is, you know, I was a nurse in my previous life, which led me to my day job as a psych nurse practitioner. So I have a lot of Western medicine background, but how I got to the trauma coaching was out of the absolute worst experience I had had in my life. So, you know, rewind back to 2019, I'd actually just gotten out of a 10-year, relatively what I thought was a healthy relationship with a really nice guy. It was just the puzzle pieces weren't fitting. We were becoming more like friends. I did all the things. I did all the therapies. We did the therapies and we couldn't figure out necessarily what the block was. And it was a lot because I struggled with my own codependency, which I had known from doing therapy for, you know, half of my lifetime. I grew up in a dysfunctional childhood and had a lot of family struggles, a lot of struggles growing up with peers. And so in that relationship, what I had come to learn on the outside of that was that being in a safer relationship was not comfortable for me. I didn't know how to exist in that because my life had been so chaotic up until then. So unfortunately, that relationship ended as amicably, you know, as it could be. We lasted longer than most marriages, you know, together 10 years. He's a very nice person and I would never say anything bad about him. But out of that, the blame and shame and all of those burdens that I carried on myself for not being able to make that relationship work. Mm-hmm. What was wrong with me? He's such a nice guy. I love him. I care about him, but what is not fitting? And we tried so hard to make it work and it just didn't. So in 2019, I left that relationship and was really on my own for the first time in a long time. And out of that was just a really deep depression that I sunk into. Q 2022, with a global pandemic, and I had experienced a series of traumatic events back to back to back in the beginning part of that year. So sitting in already that vulnerability, the failure of that relationship, wondering what the hell was wrong with me and why I couldn't make that relationship work, despite knowing in all the codependency work that I had already done, knowing the things about me, but still feeling stuck in some way, having all these traumatic events happen, then life starts to slowly shift back to normal. And I just didn't know what to do with myself and where to go from that dark place. And I think, you know, some well-meaning friends were encouraging me to get on dating apps to just like feel better about myself, a little confidence booster. And that was when my abuser found me. And so it was out of that dark place that I got into the most toxic and horrible, abusive, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, you know, friendship relationship of my life. And I was not in it that long. But it was out of that that I was led to discovering what narcissistic abuse is, and covert narcissistic abuse, the more insidious type, led me to my trauma coaching, led me to finding Caroline Strawson, who is a lady from the UK who is redefining narcissism and what that means in our society, and working with her and her healing program and working with her and her mastermind. It led me to all these, you know, beautiful events that allow me to sit in this seat today as a healing person and pass that and pay it forward to other people. So that's a very long-winded way of saying it took me a long time to get here, and here I am.
Well, that's, you know, and I like that you said, I mean, you had a long-term relationship that was not awful. You just didn't, he wasn't your person, but
right.
It wasn't, he wasn't abusive. He wasn't any of
no.
those things. And then you went into that narcissistic, covert, all that horrible stuff that went on after that. And this just proves again that when we don't heal from the parts of us that need to be healed, then we continue, then we repeat. So maybe there was some sabotage in that 10-year relationship. Then right away, I find that, you know, when my first long-term relationship ended and I was like, I'm just going to not do that again, I ended up in the worst relationship of my life.
Right. Similar patterns.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's interesting, even though yours wasn't terrible, it was still not for you. It wasn't right. And, you know, and I want to back it up for a second, because really interesting, we work with a lot of nurses and, and people in the medical field in general. And it's interesting that you were a nurse and were in psychiatric nursing in particular. And then here you were, someone that probably knew a lot more about mental health disorders, but yet here you were ending up in a toxic relationship. What are your thoughts about that?
So I had actually, I will be doing, you know, another podcast about the shame of being a mental health provider, helping other people, men and women alike, in abusive relationships while sitting in this seat, in this home, being in an abusive relationship. The imposter syndrome and hypocrisy that I would tell my was through the roof. And like I said, I had been on my codependency recovery for years. You know, I did meetings, codependency meetings. I knew my habits. I knew my traits. I knew my wounds. Like, I knew all of this logically. And I remember telling my therapist at the time, Dr. Doug, I said, I know every reason as to why I'm led to these things. I know these patterns, but I don't feel better. Like, I cannot talk myself out of what this feeling is, and that subconscious, you know, almost underpinning of that leads you to these patterns over and over and over again. And so being in the medical field and having this knowledge and being in this relationship, knowing like shit is not right, but I could not figure out logically, I didn't even like this person. I'm like, you are not a nice person. You are not wise. You are not caring. You're not thoughtful, but I could not understand what that hold was on me. Until I found Caroline and on Spotify and started educating myself on trauma bonding and the chemical, you know, addiction to things like that. But it was, I mean, it was embarrassing to be a mental health provider sitting in this seat while also living that life. It's like, what the hell do I know? I'm not doing any better than anyone else.
Yeah. And it's amazing that double life that we live. I mean, I was a certified crisis counselor, taking hotline calls, talking people out of suicide or getting them help.
Right.
I was like getting teacher of the month.
Yep.
And, you know, I was the teacher that all the kids came to when there was problems, but yet there I was dealing with the
yep.
shit at home. And there's so much shame and guilt that's involved with that.
Yes. I mean, the shame and the embarrassment, and that's what being in a relationship like that does to you. It warps your reality. And people, you know, how I talk about codependency is my platform. And I really see codependency as just the other side of the spectrum. So if narcissism is on one side, codependency is on the other. And ideally, we want to all be somewhere in the middle, but depending on how we grew up and how we learned about love and how we learned about relationships and how we learned about boundaries, well, we slide to one form or the other. And both people who identify with codependency and narcissism have the same inner child wounds.
Yep.
Right? But one projects outward, and codependence, we turn it inward.
Yep.
It's that I'm the one that's wrong. I'm the one that is fucked up. I'm the one that needs to go to therapy. I'm the one that's not doing enough. And it's that internal blame, shame, and those relationships amplify that, and they exploit that your abusers know that about you. They know that you'll continue to blame yourself. And that's why the dynamic works so well.
Oh, yeah.
That's why we're magnets for each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, to sit here and feel so hypocritical when I'm supporting men and women and encouraging them, but yet I couldn't say that stuff in the mirror to myself. I couldn't figure out why I was so stuck.
I wonder if there was anything like trying to fix or help them.
Oh, of course. I mean, it's a classic codependent. You know, I grew up in what you would consider a classic definition of codependency, having family members who struggled with addiction or substance use. So, you know, those I work a lot with internal family systems type there. I mean, with myself and with my clients. So developing those survival mechanisms and those codependent parts of me, I'm a fixer, I'm a rescuer, right? I'm a martyr, I'm a perfectionist, I'm overachieving, right? I have depression part, I have anxiety part. All of those things were the classic, you know, fix, save, rescue of the other person. So I really was a very classic picture of a codependent. I see it differently now that I've done a lot of work on myself. But yes, I mean, it was, and also reparative attachment. So much of what we do in our everyday lives is trying to repair our formative attachment to our attachment figures in different scenarios and in different relationships. So between attachment and our inner child wounds, a lot of our behavior is subconscious and already driven to keep repairing that. If I can fix it with this person that I'm dating, it will somehow make the fact that I couldn't fix my mom better. Yeah. It sounds so irrational, but that's the underlying drive.
Well, but we're also not thinking rationally.
No.
We're driven by our subconscious. I mean, that's one of the things that I think, you know, and I love therapists. But that's one of the things that a lot of therapists are missing is that subconscious work. Because like you said, you had been doing work for years with a therapist. And it wasn't until you found your coach. And I'm going to take this time for just a second and say, hey, anyone who's listening to this, I don't give a shit who you find as a coach. Find someone that you resonate with, because there's a time for therapy, but then there's a time for coaching. Coaching actually helps you with specific steps and goals and achievements. And we are often the ones, we've been there, done that, written the book about it. We know. So we know where you're making mistakes, we will give advice. Therapists don't do that as much. And I find that's a part that's really lacking, because of the fact that if we knew better, we would do better. Like, if I don't know how to do brain surgery, I'm not suddenly going to be able to do it because I heard about it. Like, it's not, you have to actually practice the new thing, the new skill that you're using. And that's where we're missing a lot. And so, you know, was that something for you where you were like, hey, this is, I don't want to waste any more time. Let me get some extra reinforcements, because obviously what I'm doing isn't working.
Oh, I mean, when my abuser had moved out, I had thought I had so many lows in my life. And like, we could go on for days about my life and the grief events I've lived through and the traumas that I've lived through. But that was the lowest. I mean, if I didn't find something, I was either going to kill myself in that relationship quickly or slowly. It would have happened either way. And so you hit on something really important, I think, in that therapy, and this is not to say anything bad about therapy. For talk therapy, there is a time and a place, 100%. Things like CBT were so helpful for me in the beginning of my journey, and the resources like Codependence Anonymous meetings, like that was all Codependent No More. Those were all really helpful to give me the knowledge. So maybe it's my nurse brain, but I like to know the why behind why I'm doing things, which is great for my, you know, the Western med side of me. But in my own healing journey, coaching is much more hands-on. It is much more active. I will tell you, I tell people I'm not for everyone, because I'm going to tell you exactly what you probably don't want to hear, but you need to hear to get where you want to go. And so as I was on my healing, you know, journey, whatever you want to call it, pulling away and really seeing the Western medicine side of things is how flawed we can be. People who are in those positions are so well-intentioned. We want to help people get better, but talk therapy and the things that Western medicine does, even me giving out medications and prescriptions, it only covers one part of the brain. You can only access you know, language and talk therapy in the parts of the brain that have language. And there's so much more of the brain that is involved in trauma processing and where trauma is held that you have to access those parts too in order to achieve true healing or resolution of symptoms. Mm-hmm. And that's what I had found on my, you know, recovery journey, teaching journey, this, that, and the other thing is that wearing the hat of Western medicine in my day job and trying to incorporate these more holistic somatic modalities, it's been a bit of a struggle because I don't necessarily believe in a lot of the Western med way anymore.
Yeah.
I just don't. It keeps people sick. It keeps people compliant. It's not helping them to fully heal.
Agreed.
And that's where incorporating both is so important.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, you do brain spotting, we do psyche. It's all about the subconscious. Mm-hmm. So,
yes.
You know, that's such an important piece that's missing. And I think, you know, and we find very often where clients that are on anti-anxiety medication, they start working at that subconscious and all of a sudden they're like, I've been taking my Xanax in 3 weeks.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, because you're healing the core part. You're actually, you know, I'm really big, you know, I really look at it holistically because I'm a health educator and I love looking at the holistic perspective. And, you know, it's amazing that when we look at, when we heal those parts of us and we look at what we're eating, what we're drinking, what we're paying, what we're focusing on. I mean, all of those things are so important in healing. This is why purely just talking about it, it's a good starting point.
Right.
But it's not the end all be all because we're not just our brains. We are our physical health, mental health, social health, and spiritual health. Those are all parts of who we are. And so we've got to reconnect to those parts and put things back into balance. Because when we've been in this survival mode, nothing is working the way it should be.
No, not at all. I often tell my clients, you know, do you feel like, I mean, this is just human conditioning too. Like as human beings, we stray away. That's a natural biological thing, right? To stray away from what's uncomfortable. So then what happens is anytime that we feel something uncomfortable, depending on how you grew up and how emotions were received, where many of us grew up with parents who were just children in grown-up bodies, none of that generational trauma had been healed. Therefore, we don't even know how to sit with discomfort. Many people don't know how to allow that to process out. So how I tell people when we're doing brain spotting and we're really trying to get back into the body is we're going to put the Barbie doll head back on the Barbie doll. Because so much of life, we become little heads on strings and we become so left brain thinking our way through life that we forget how to feel and that feeling is okay. Feeling is normal and natural, but we are terrified of it.
Yeah. And those big feelings after toxic relief, you talked about, I mean, you were, you know, potentially suicidal. It was so bad.
Oh, it was awful.
And that's where I think so many people will, that's when that addiction piece comes into play so much because we look at it, we're like, this hurts so bad. And the part of our brain that wants to fix it is like, hey, you know what would be good? Another relationship or go back to the other person because feeling all of those feelings is terrible. And you're right. We haven't been taught how to feel those big feelings. So we want everything we can to avoid, avoid, avoid. But all we're doing is prolonging the pain.
Exactly. And it's avoid, distract, soothe, minimize, whatever it is, the greater pain. So, you know, our brains and our bodies, our nervous systems are wired to constantly be reaching a state of homeostasis. It doesn't give a shit how you get there, whether it is that person, that drug, that, you know, TV show, that emotional eating, all of those protector parts of us show up in those ways to get us back to homeostasis. And as soon as that happens, right, the dysregulation, that cortisol surge, it gets soothed because then it's replaced by dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, all our good feel good molecules. And that's why we get stuck in these toxic cycles. So when, if we rewind back to my healthy relationship, I didn't have any of that. There was no cortisol because he was caring. He was kind. He gave a shit about me. He put me first. So there was no up, down. There was no dysregulation.
Which is weird when you're used to crappy relationships.
Yes. It was not comfortable. That's not how I grew up. My relationship with my parents were very complicated. My previous relationships were, if it wasn't dramatic, there was something, some draw in me at some point to either subconsciously create an argument or to make it dramatic to get that cortisol surge. Yeah. Our bodies become addicted to the highs and the lows. Mm-hmm. And all your body ever wants to do is get back to a state of calm and a state of homeostasis. It doesn't give a shit how it accomplishes that.
But it's interesting, isn't it, that you know we might consciously say, I want a healthy relationship, but then we're doing everything to not have a healthy relationship, and then we're wondering why we can't have a healthy relationship. But but you're right. I mean, I have so many clients that are like, I'm just not attracted to that person. And it's like, okay, well, why not? Like, what, you know, it's fine not to be attracted to them, but why? What is it? Well, they're not exciting enough. It's I'm afraid it's not going to be fun. And, you know, like, I think we look for, I think what, before I met my now husband, it was relationships in the beginning. It was like all the butterflies and are they going to call me and all that kind of stuff. And when I met my now husband, I was excited to see him, but I wasn't worried about him calling me. It was, it was more of a, just like a friendship that was just growing in the connection and everything else, but there was never these highs and lows. And because I had done that work, it changed what I was looking for. I wouldn't have been attracted to my now husband 15 years ago. He wouldn't have been on my radar. He would have been, he's not fun and exciting enough, to be honest, you know, but he's consistent. He's calm.
But it's not even what you're necessarily attracted to. It's what your nervous system is willing to accept.
Yes.
And that's where people, right, when you say that disconnect of I want this, or even on the opposite end of that, me saying in this relationship, I don't even like him. Yeah. But what is this? Like, what is this going on in my body that I cannot break it? I knew a few weeks in that something was off, a few weeks. And I was with him for another, you know, year and a half or so after that.
Most of us can say, even the people that have been 20, 30, 40 years in the relationship, most people will say, I had signs before we even got married. I had signs really quickly into the relationship. I mean, I remember my first husband, I think we were like 3 weeks in and we went out to a dance club and I ran into a guy, like an old flame or whatever. And my ex-husband threw a fit. Like kept me up till 4 o'clock in the morning, yelling and screaming at me because I didn't introduce him. And then basically told me, well, the reason why you don't know any better is because you've only known toxic relationships. Basically, I'm going to teach you. And because I hadn't healed, I was like, maybe he's right. Maybe I'm a terrible person and I should have done differently. And, but it's again, now I would have been like, fuck you.
Exactly.
You get to talk to me that way. But again, because we don't do the work, and there's so much of that blame and that shame and that guilt and all that internal that you're talking about that keeps us trapped in these cycles.
I mean, Stephanie, I shit you not. Like we with my toxic abuser, when we had broken up, I was doing codependency meetings and Al-Anon meetings like all day, every day. And I still went back to him. And I could not understand why. You know, this is where I came from. And I'm sure that some of it, you know, actually my abuser's friends used to say, I think you're punishing yourself in some way for not being able to make things work with your ex who was a really caring person. And I do think that obviously there were components of that, of the, well, I didn't deserve that type of love. There's my deserving, not deserving wound, right? I didn't deserve that type of love. I couldn't make it work. It must be me. So this must be the love that I do deserve. Because it was the love that was consistent that I knew with growing up. Intermittent, sometimes it's hot, sometimes it's cold. I had literally said to my ex at times, being around you reminds me of being around my parent that I had a really toxic relationship with. Like, if that's not a red flag staring you right in the fucking face, I don't know what is. And still I stayed.
Yep.
And the shame grew and the shame grew. And then they start to isolate you. And then you start to isolate yourself because you can't tell the full truth about what's going on because you don't even understand what's going on. Your reality is so warped. I pride myself, you know, I don't know how, I think people would say and describe me now, my closest friends, that I kind of say things the way that I think that they are. I'm pretty blunt. You know, I can be cushy and I can be soft in ways, but I think that I'm a strong woman. I think that I was a strong woman before this because of all that I've lived through. But they convince you otherwise, and you feel so weak and you feel so disgusting and you feel like an imposter and a hypocrite. So then I started just cutting myself off from people because I couldn't tell my full truth because I didn't understand my full truth. I was living in this warped sense of reality and in that cognitive dissonance that being honest with people further ostracized me. Yeah. Well, why don't you just leave then? You know, he's a piece of shit. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm trying and I don't know why. And it's all with the trauma bond and how dysregulated that makes you feel. It's awful.
Isn't it? And that's what, and again, people that haven't been through this don't understand. You said something that resonated for me because it just came to me. I remember at one point thinking to myself, wow, this guy, my first husband, reminds me of the worst of my mother and my father.
Yep, and here
I
we
can
are.
handle that. I know I can handle
Yes.
that. I
Yes.
had that conscious thought.
Yes.
Why would I choose the worst of my parents to
Yes.
be romantically involved with?
But that's with that attachment. If I can fix it with them, somehow it will repair it with my original attachment figures. And that's not something you're thinking. This is a subconscious drive.
Yeah.
So much of what we do, and that's really what I've learned in exploring, brain spotting and somatic experiencing and internal family systems and polyvagal theory, all of these more holistic perspectives. And they have given me such a different view of how people and how I function and have functioned in everyday life, that all of my thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars of Western medicine, certifications and whatnot, just did not provide me. I would have still been stuck and still doing the same shit had it not been for that relationship. When I started Googling his behavior, which is again, maybe the second most apparent red flag. If one's reminds you of a toxic person already in your life, and two, that you're Googling, you should maybe call a coach, right?
I was, it's the typical thing is that with professional women, we're really good. We're overachievers and we're great at researching. That's, let me find out the solution to this problem because that's what we're going to figure out. What makes us really good at our job. It's so interesting to see, and this is again, I think so many people that are so smart in so many ways. I really want to start making this really well known that this has nothing to do with our intelligence.
Not at all.
It really
Abusers
happened to
will
anyone.
specifically look for, intelligent, smart, kind, caring women. It's not, they're not attracted to you or drawn to you because of what's wrong with you. I mean, that's a component of, that's our own contribution to the toxicity, is our inner child wounds and our attachment, anxious attachment that had never been repaired in the way that it needed to. But how I used to, and how I tell some of my clients, and how I used to think about it is, well, what fun is it to break down a woman who already feels that she's weak? It's way more fun to take a woman who is has a lot of convictions and a lot of intelligence and a lot of oomph in life and watch her slowly degrade into nothing. And that's how I felt my relationship was,
And
is
that's why
he
they
had,
feel so empty afterwards.
oh, exactly. It's like, how, I don't know how I got there. Coming out of it and being, 2 years out of it now and in a healthy relationship, like you said, if anyone crossed me in any sort of way, any way at all, I'd be like, fuck off. But old me would have been like, oh my God, what did I do wrong? How did I contribute to that interaction? What was I in my tone of voice? It's again, all of that codependent turning back on myself. Me, me, me. What did I do? What did I do? And that's just because we try to stay safe. We have learned how to adapt in unsafe environments, typically from childhoods and from other adverse events. So you just become really good at surviving. And whatever mask you wear in that moment, whether it's people pleasing or, fawning or being meek or, ignoring, dismissing, that's what's going to work for you and what's going to continue to work for them.
I mean, I think this episode is really going to inspire so many people because I think this is such an important conversation to be had. It's not always like you didn't always have crappy relationships, but the kind of it's one of those things, and I don't know about you, but I'll say this, and I'd love to hear your opinion. As much as my ex-husband was a shitty person and he treated me badly, I have to say, had I not been through it and gotten out of it, I don't know if I would be here helping anybody else because I needed a magnifying glass to show me like, hey, you've got to do some things to fix things. And if you don't, it's gonna stay the same. I could have never imagined being here, but I don't want to say I needed because it's such, it was so terrible to deal with at the time. But there was some of it that I am grateful for in that the lessons that I had, not in it necessarily, but glad that I got what I needed out of that to create something different. What's your perspective?
I mean, you could pull the words, right? If I could heart, emoji button, everything that you just said, because I actually touch on this a lot in a a chapter that I contributed to a book called The Unseen Wounds of Women with Caroline Strawson and some other masterminders, some other amazing abuse survivors. Like the biggest, we call those are my Avengers. Like they are superheroes. And there's so many of us like yourself and other women that I have met. And men, I don't want to discount men. Men Yes. are in abusive relationships too. Mm-hmm. But all of these amazing people that we're finding each other and we're finding this shared language, it's truly incredible because it's coming out of so much of our darkest moments of our lives. And you had said the word grateful. And a lot of the times I do have, and I don't expect any client that I work with to get here. I think this takes a lot of inner work and it's not for everyone, mm-hmm. but I have a lot of gratitude for my abuser. My chapter was called Lather, Rinse, Repeat Until You Don't. Mm-hmm. It took him coming into my life to shove all of that stuff so far down my throat that I could not live in it anymore.
Yeah.
I had to find a different way. And that's the positive psychology of it all. It's not this invalidating, oh, aren't you so grateful for all your traumas? Like, fuck no, I'm yes. a hot mess because of my traumas.
Yes. Yeah.
Work of my life to heal my traumas. But there is a bit of that butterfly effect or domino effect of had this not happened, then this wouldn't happen and this wouldn't happen. And I really do, in this journey that I have become much more accepting of, I'm not religious, but I would say I am spiritual in the things that the universe brings to me, even this opportunity right now. And like I said, the serendipity of listening to your most recent episode and hearing my words coming out of this person's mouth, mm-hmm. it's so wild. And had I not met him, none of this would have happened.
Yeah.
So like many things in life, I am here and in this seat and doing what I'm doing and paying it forward because of and in spite of him, because yeah. of and in spite of my childhood, because of and in spite of all my grief and all my trauma and all my losses. So I agree wholeheartedly that this is a part of the process. And if you're just willing to go back in order to move forward, there's no reason why you can't be sitting at a table with us having this exact same discussion.
Yeah. And for anyone, like, you know, no matter where you are in your journey of all of this, I think sometimes it's like, is it possible? I mean,
yep.
yes, me, we're not gurus. Yep. We're normal people yep. like anybody else. We just decided to do whatever it took to yep. create something different. And we stepped into that. We took action steps. And then I mm-hmm. could have never imagined this life. Jessica, you could have mm-hmm. never imagined this life, right? I mean, it's beautiful. So any of you who are stuck in saying, you know, I don't know, is it possible? Can I really have this? Is this just for some other people?
Yep.
I was there.
No.
So I
yes,
get it.
You can. Yes, you can. Because it feels like a mountain. When I sat, you know, I'll be 39, I think, this year. I can't even remember how old I am. But, you know, at 35-ish, and I'm sitting there, and the mountains of my life that I felt like I had to climb to get where I am today, it still feels mountainous. I still have things, you know, healing is a journey. It really is. I know people say, oh, it's so cliche and all these like hot button words that come out, but I will never wake up one day and be like, oh, I'm magically healed. No, there's still some shit that's trapped in there. And the nervous system, what I have found very much is in a hierarchy. It allows me to tap into the unresolved things in the order that it sees it safest. Mm-hmm. And how I tap into that now is that I pay attention to signs. I pay attention to the patterns that are coming back. I pay attention to the triggers that are what it's saying and what I'm saying to myself about myself when those things are happening. There's always ways that we can work through things and get better. It's just, we have to go back to where it started in order to, you know, get caught up with all of that. And that's where things like brain spotting and some of your somatic modalities, EMDR, it can help accelerate that process. Because you're going back to the body, unlocking where that's stuck is, you know, trauma is not necessarily just a thinking thought process yes. disorder.
Yes.
It's a processing disorder that involves your body.
Yes.
So if you neglect the body, you're going to only think better. You're not going to feel better.
Yeah.
So like you, I would encourage anybody that it's never too late. I work with people in their 60s, in their 70s. It's never too late to start making a better life for yourself, mm-hmm. ever.
Agreed. And you're worth it. You're worth it.
Yes, you are 100% worth it on your best day and on your perceived worst day. Like you said, I'm not a guru. My girlfriend, Tanya, that I met on an international brain spotting training. So brain spotting, the trainings are usually held like in UK time. A lot of people are in the UK and other parts of the world. There were maybe 40 some people on the training, a handful of people in the United States. two people in Pittsburgh. And that's how I met her.
Funny.
And then with her business and my business, we got together and held a codependency recovery retreat for women. And now we're wanting to expand to more retreats, doing a men's retreat for toxic masculinity and learning how to not compartmentalize as much, or doing grief retreats and helping people without all of this. And her, you know, 20 some plus abusive marriage, like, what were the chances that we found each other?
Mm-hmm.
And just because we sit in those seats at those retreats, we told, you know, our participants, we're no different. We're no better. We're just maybe a couple steps further along in the journey. Where you're at, where I'm at, we're all at different, you know, in different areas, and we're all accessing different things from our past, but we're all on the same platform.
Yeah. I love it. I love retreats. Retreats are so awesome. It's just a great opportunity to get away and really mm-hmm. reconnect and connect with other people. There's something about shared experience that's just so magical. So I love that. Now we're getting close to time, and I could keep going because this is such a great conversation, but what are some ways that people can follow you? Because obviously there's going to be a lot of people that are like, all right, let's look up Jessica. Like, we need to know about her. How can they find you?
Yeah. So I do have a website, www.itendswithyoullc.com. That is the easiest place. There's a contact form on there. So if you fill out, it's like four questions. That's the easiest way to get in direct contact with me. I do have social media. My business social media is very subpar right now, but my Instagram is at generational.jess, and my personal is at jessmo, jessmo, like whoa, whoa. There's lots of cats and concert pictures on there, but I'm trying to, you know, I was trying to keep my personal and professional life separate, but it's really tough when your professional life is you. So
it mixes in, you know, so much. My Facebook account was my private, you know, whatever. Now it's like, it's not. It can't stay that way.
And that's what I was trying. And my brother, I remember my brother said at one point, oh, just combine them. Like, you know, you're going to make yourself crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you want to find me on Facebook, my business has a page. It ends with you, LLC. I am Jess, just Jess, J-E-S-S with my last name, Perenni. I'm in sunglasses, a cutoff t-shirt, holding a high noon and a backwards baseball cap. It is very me. So please feel free to reach out on any of those platforms. And through that, I have links to my chapter in the book that I was featured on, other podcasts that I'll be interviewing on and for, and lots of other little goodies and resources.
Awesome. Anything you want to leave the audience with?
That it is never too late to start over if you're struggling with anything that Stephanie mentions at all on her entire amazing platform that I'm addicted to. That there is help out there for you. You just have to find your people, your support system, and your person, a good coach. You know, I'm not for everyone. Stephanie might not be for everyone, but it's never too late, and you are worth it.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Well, thank you so much for coming and hanging out with all of us today. We appreciate all the great knowledge that you imparted with us, your great honesty and rawness of your experience. Thank you so much for sharing.
Yeah.
Everyone who's listening, thanks for tuning in. As always, never forget, you are way stronger than you realize. See you next episode. Bye, everybody.
So that's it for today's episode of Toxic Love Podcast. Head on over to iTunes or wherever you subscribe to your shows. One lucky listener every single week who subscribes and posts a review on iTunes will be entered for a chance to win the grand prize VIP drawing with Stephanie McPhail herself. Be sure to head on over to ToxicLovePodcast.com and pick up a free copy of Stephanie's gift, and join us next time.